Hello and welcome to Wise Women, the Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experiences of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything. Good day to you all. Here we are again. Susie sitting with a cup of chamomile tea, me sitting with a cup of common or garden. And thank you. I want to thank Susie for something before we even start, which was so simple. My husband had a digestive problem and you put him onto some peppermint oil capsules, which you got from the ordinary pharmacist. And there's a bit of me going, hang on a second, why is a witch recommending we go and get peppermint capsules from the ordinary pharmacist? But I guess it's because some things are good no matter where they come from. If it's what you need, it's what you
totally.
Need.
It's the only place when I needed peppermint oil that I could find peppermint oil that's strong enough. So peppermint tea won't do when your belly's up the duff that much. Mm. Not up the duff, that means something else entirely. When your belly's up the spout.
Or is not down the spout.
Or is not down the spout, or whatever the ailment appears to be that's belly related. In my experience, really strong peppermint, much stronger than a peppermint tea could be. So peppermint oil is bordering on the miraculous.
Yes.
And so when I have asked for peppermint oil, that was where I got directed. And I found they worked, so why not? You know, okay, they come in a box from a pharmacist, but whatevs, in a way.
Yeah. It's just that lovely thing. One of the things I really do adore about you is that for all your witchiness, you'll take the obvious thing, the next, what is in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
If you need something and it's got to come from a chemist, it's got to come from a chemist. End of. You know. But if you can forage it and work it out yourself, that's amazing. And when we had somebody to stay recently, who had very itchy ankles, and I gave him my homemade self-heal and plantain oil, and he's waxing lyrical about it.
Mm-hmm.
But probably because it was the only thing there that I had. If I'd given him Savlon, it probably would have been all right.
Plantain's way better than Savalon. But having said that, I have recently discovered that actually there's every chance that I could make my own, not peppermint oil, but that if I'd soaked some of my peppermint overnight and then turned it into a tea, it would probably be strong enough.
Oh, now that because is interesting.
Something else happens entirely when you soak leaves for a long time before you then turn them into tea.
I'll give that a go.
I'm going to give it a go too, because I'd much rather not. You know, basically, I would far rather not be buying from the pharmacy, simply because, firstly, it's not local. Secondly, it's not organic. Thirdly, it comes in a bloody plastic thing.
Exactly, it comes in packaging. Yeah.
But you know, when in dire need, I'm in favour of take effectively, kind of to paraphrase an expression you use a lot. Take what the universe offers.
Yes.
Because I will always remember, two things really. The firstly is an expression which I very much grew up with, which is trust in God and lock your car.
Trust God but tether your camel is the Arabic one. And I love that.
Yeah. Yes. And it's, you know, it's, but also that some story I remember being told about, it might even be your story, actually, about some bloke who was asking the universe, if you told him it would have been God, for money. And
the answer coming back saying, can I win the lottery and buy a ticket? Was that?
That story, exactly. Yeah. That there's no point in harping on about when I win the lottery this or I want to win the lottery that, if you don't actually go and buy a ticket.
Mm.
And that that spirit will answer you, will do their damnedest to answer you with what's available.
Yes.
And what's available is not always the most perfect iteration of what you would wish for.
Yes.
But it'll be what works and what will do for now and what will then set you on the journey of...
It'll help you take the next step.
Precisely.
Always.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so the next step on the way to finding out that actually the peppermint that grows all around me in the fields and hedgerows will do if I you know, treat it differently.
Yeah.
And that I don't need to go for peppermint oil in capsules. Yeah. You know, there will be a way to make that peppermint work. But at the time I needed it, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But still, giving me that peppermint kept me on track with, oh, but peppermint is the answer. I don't think my mum would mind me telling you this. Well, half the world. Not
sorry,
half
Susie's
the world,
mum.
The ten people who are listening. 10,000. One of whom may be her, so she can let me know if she minds me telling you when it's all too horribly late. She had a thing whereby her saliva dried up. And this was a reaction in her to having one of the COVID vaccines. Mm-hmm. And apparently your saliva drying up is a reasonably common, it's a commonly noted side effect.
Right.
And that pretty much sucked all the joy out of life for her.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's really hard to be comfortable when you've got no saliva. It's impossible to enjoy any food when you've got so much saliva, to the extent that it was fairly impossible to even eat.
Wow.
And luckily for her, she has a beloved and kind and amazing friend who just made soup after soup after soup for her. But she lost about, I don't know, 2, maybe 3 stone in weight because she simply couldn't eat.
Yeah.
And for her birthday, I had sent her, she loves peppermint creams, but her story had been that she couldn't eat the peppermint cream because she
had no saliva.
Had no saliva, yeah. So she wouldn't enjoy peppermint cream. They were really strong, really fancy peppermint creams with proper peppermint oil in.
Yeah.
And she'd been on antibiotics, and so she couldn't. She also couldn't have the whiskey I had also sent her for her birthday.
Yeah.
Anyway, she got to the point where the antibiotic thing was over. So she was like, right, I'm going to have a whiskey and, you know, stuff it and damn it. I'm going to have one of these peppermint creams. She took one bite of a peppermint cream and her mouth flooded with saliva.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Isn't it
glorious? That's the most beautiful story, isn't it?
And it's been absolutely fine since. But, you know, when you go back, in all of the kind of written histories of everywhere, and apparently it's a big thing in Arabic culture, and it's a big thing in ours, peppermint is the ally of the whole of our digestive system, big time.
Yeah.
And so it just made perfect sense. As soon as she said it, I was like, why did we not think of that before?
Yeah.
Why were we not going, here, drink this, eat this thing with peppermint in? It'll sort you out.
And even more lovely was actually probably a chocolate peppermint cream.
It was,
probably loaded with chocolate, loaded with sugar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's just what seems to me to be so important in life is not to be a fundamentalist.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
You know, you can't do this. You can only do that. Well, I won't touch this and I won't touch that. I've got a little thing. It's going to happen tonight and I'm anticipating it may not happen, but I'm doing Sacred Magic of the Angels, this online course, and it is amazing. It's extraordinary. Tonight we're looking at the moon tree, which is how you dedicate a tree in your garden to Gabriel and the energies of the moon, which are the etheric channel for other energies to help things, and you bless the tree and you hang ornaments on it, and it's just a lovely
sounds thing. Marvelously witchy, frankly.
It does sound marvelously witchy, doesn't it? But you also offer the tree a libation of milk on the full moon, and of course we've got vegans on the course, and I sent a message.
Plant milk?
No, there's an association with Hathor.
All right,
okay. And it has to be nurturing animal milk. And it just made me laugh so much because I texted the bish to say, I'm probably going to get this question, is oatmeal almond milk or the other milk going? He said, no, you give the gods what they want, not what you want. And I thought, yeah, actually, if the age-old custom is milk, it's milk. And I'm sorry, all you have to do is get 1 pint in from your local, if you've got a local farm,
not
or
even,
one pint.
Go and beg a cupful off your neighbour.
Yes, and then freeze some.
Yeah.
Yeah, get a pint, freeze it, and every month take out a thing and give the tree the milk it wants.
Yeah.
But just allow the tradition to be without being too stuffy about it.
Yeah.
I mean, I absolutely get that people don't want to drink milk. I've got loads of friends who don't drink milk anymore, and I only drink goat milk. So my tree's going to, in the new house, will get goat milk.
Yeah.
So,
Sorry, my little brain had gone to, so Hathor's very, very cow to me. Is she going to be happy with goat milk? Might you need to go and get cow milk, Maggie?
I'll ask.
As you've just said that.
I know. I just thought that too. Well, I'll ask.
Yeah.
I will ask, because I've never had an outdoor moon tree. I've had an indoor moon tree, which is where you you ask permission to take a branch from a willow, a pear, or I can't remember the third kind of tree now, but a willow or a pear anyway will do.
Right.
And you ask for it and you set it in stones or something. You seal the end with wax and you set it in a vase with stones or something, and you bless it and hallow it and honour it at the full moon. But that one doesn't need milk because it's not living. So right. I've never had to do that before. So I have no idea is the answer. I shall I'll put a little bit of goat milk one side, a little bit of cow milk the other side and see what happens.
Okay.
Try not to poison hedgehogs. Oh, dear.
Yes, that. Well, presumably you're pouring it into the ground, are you?
Yes.
Yeah, so weirding out the earthworms, but probably.
Yes, I guess I get more and more witchy. The more you live in the countryside, the more you live with the land. How can you not?
But that's not a... That sounds like that's a thing coming from your tradition.
It is, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But let's face it, all traditions are one at the heart, aren't they? That's what the whole of the podcast is about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yes. I mean, would a kind of, the kind of Christian you'd expect to find in your, is there even such a thing as your bog standard Christian church? Or are there so many factions, there's no such thing as a bog standard?
Oh, unfortunately, the bog standard Christian church now is an Anglican or Methodist with about six people in it.
Yeah.
So there isn't much of a bog standard, mainly because we've lost the magic and the mystery. And although Protestantism was very important because Catholicism had gone seriously controlling and big frocks,
mm-hmm.
It took all the magic away. It took all the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Took all the statues. Took all the images.
So replaced them with sermons.
Became very, very lay down the letter of the law rather than sit and receive the magic of the Spirit. And no, most conventional Christians wouldn't support pretty much anything I do.
Oh dear.
Well, I have an open table at communion, as you know.
Yeah.
Because you've been to one. I mean, yeah. It wasn't your thing, but it was lovely of you to turn up and try it. But most churches don't have an open table.
I don't even know what
an
that means.
An open table means they won't give communion to you if you're not in their church or confirmed in their church.
Wow, you're kidding, really?
No. No.
Gosh. Okay. So, therefore, not only is having a moon tree not a normal slice of Christianity, is angels working magic a normal slice
angels
of
is viewed as Catholic.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I had no idea.
It's so interesting how people have cut off from the magic and the miracles, and that is my job to try and bring them back. And my mother-in-law, when I was married to this Jewish man, she said, oh, miracles don't happen anymore. They happened in biblical days, but they don't happen anymore. And I thought, how can you even believe that?
Yeah.
If it was true once, it's true now. But she had, you don't get miracles from God. And I have other Jewish friends who say, oh no, I'm not into this sacred magic, angels, miracles, that kind of thing. We don't do that. And I'm sort of going, well, I'm really sorry you don't do that because it's glorious.
I'm so sad that a religion to which one subscribes could be considered to be so dead kind of thing.
Yes. Yes. And that we're all, if you are raised in Christianity, you are raised in this colourless religion. It's worship this man, adore this man, adhere to this man, fight for the unborn, but don't fight for anybody after they're born. Which is actually such a cop-out, because you can fight for the unborn at no cost to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to give anything. You don't have to do anything. You can just judge.
Mm.
And, yeah.
Very, very strange times indeed. Yeah, and the more you speak, and the more I'm casting my mind around to all the kind of places where I see things done in the name of religion, the more I see how diverse a thing it is, the umbrella that we call Christianity.
Mm.
And that, yes, that's my kind of rather innocent, I suppose, is a kind way to say it. Supreme ignorance around all the various different threads and the enormous amount of diversity between the different threads is starting to be revealed to me.
There's a website called Ship of Fools, and a few years ago, and it's all about utter ridiculousness in Christianity. It's an excellent website, actually. There things
it's
like
a great name.
Yes, has a one of them was my favourite one was a drawing of what the Song of Solomon, the loved one, would actually look like. Your face, your head is like a calves, your neck is like this, you know, and your pearls in. Did this drawing of this really weird thing. But they also had this joke competition for the best religious joke. So may I tell you the best religious joke, the one that won it?
You may.
I'm paraphrasing it a bit. There's a man walking along one night, and he comes to a bridge, and he sees another man who's about to jump off the bridge. So he goes, no, please, let me help you. What can I do? And the other man looks at him, and he sort of says, I have a faith. Do you have a faith? Do you have a faith? And the man who's about to jump goes, I'm going to call him the jumper and the rescuer. The jumper goes, yes, I have a faith. And the rescuer goes, I'm a Christian. And he goes, yes, I'm a Christian too. He says, I'm a Baptist. And he goes, yes, I'm a Baptist too. And it continues, are you a pre-1482 or post-1482 Baptist resurrection Baptist? Yes, I am. Okay, of the resurrection Baptist of the post-1482, are you a sympathetic of this, that, and the other Baptist? And it goes on and on for about 20 minutes. And then eventually he says, and are you a follower of the so-and-so protocol? And he goes, no. So the rescuer goes, die, heathen scum, and walks away. And that does show the ridiculousness of it all. But it's also in the New Age and in spirituality. You know, when after Henry died, one thing that did really help him when he was dying was spiritual healing. And he wouldn't take it from me. I'd sort of suggested it because I was virtually a little bit weird back then, even though conventional. He wouldn't hear it from me. That then a colleague at work suggested it. So he then took it from them because it's funny, isn't it? The wife and the... Yeah. Isn't this college anyway? And this woman was in London. We were in Birmingham at that point. And I phoned her and she said she would send absent healing, but she could teach me down the phone what to do to help him sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, which was literally to draw negativity out of him from my left hand and channel it out through the right hand. And it worked. So I was really interested in healing after he died. Trained in Reiki, which in those days was still very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, as I became a teacher of Reiki and managed, I was pretty good at it. I still do the odd bit here and there, mm-hmm. but I don't teach. I taught somebody to take my place when I left Birmingham. But the Reiki Wars.
What are the Reiki Wars?
The Reiki Wars are you following this particular grandmaster of Reiki, or have you rejected her and following this particular grandmaster of Reiki? Are you putting the symbols out into the public domain, or have you kept the secrets symbols secret? Are you party to the extra symbols that somebody else went and found, which turned it into something else? Do you do Reiki with Kahuna? Do you do angelic Reiki? Do you do a Reiki with the ascended masters? And you've actually got people going, my Reiki's the way to go. My Reiki's the this. So it's just human nature. It has nothing even to do with Christianity or Islam or Judaism or Reiki. It's just to do with the ego's need to be the superior one. The one I'm doing is right. Or even worse, the one I'm doing is wrong. Oh God, I'm going to hell.
Oh.
So it's everywhere.
It was bizarre. That does remind me of my favourite Christian-related joke, mm-hmm. which is far from the best one, but it's the only one I can remember, which is, it's Christmas, and the person you call the bish, obviously not your bish, or perhaps he's the archbish, he must be the archbish, is having his three sons home for Christmas. And the Archbishop has got two sons who are in the church, and they are both bishops. And then there's the other son who's not in the church and doesn't really have anything to do with the church. And anyway, they're all gathering on Christmas morning in front of the fireplace, and Father Archbishop standing there, you know, hands behind his back like they do, toasting his buttocks on the fire like you do, just enjoying himself, springing up and down on his toes. Ah, good morning, eldest son. Good morning. How are you this morning? He said, I've been ruminating on heaven and hell, and I'm wondering where it is you think you're off to after this life, and what you think it might be like. And son number one goes, oh, well, you know, clearly, Father, I'm in the church, I'm a bishop, I'm going to heaven, and I think heaven will be just like home, Father. There'll be a sense of warmth and just the rightness of right. And number two son comes in, and they have the exact same conversation, and he answers that, of course, heaven will be just like home, and it'll be full of, you know, the rightness of right and just the perfection of everything that is their worldview. And then number three son comes in, and he's asked the same question, and he goes, well, according to you lot, clearly I'm going to hell. And what's it going to be like? Well, it's just like home. You can't get near the fire for fucking bishops.
Requiem masses are said for a pope than for a bishop, and many more are said for a bishop than for an ordinary person, because they have more capacity to go wrong.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, no comment here from the witchy corner.
No. Well, my bishop, bless him, did a requiem mass for Saddam Hussein.
Fair enough.
Some people said to him, how can you do that? And he said, well, I don't think anybody else is gonna.
Yeah. Actually, and the importance of the Requiem has been coming up a lot for me recently as I run the In Ancient Ways. Our last weekend is all about the ancestors, ancestral healing, psychopomp, and healing our threads of inheritance, the trauma or the curses and the looser sense of word that we've inherited for the ancestors. And one of the journeys that I invite people to do is to go through their ancestral lineage to find a well and wise ancestor. And one of the things that's really clear is that for those families who have been brought up without any form of official religion, as it were, or kind of overt spirituality of any description, their expectation often is that to find a well and wise ancestor, they're going to have to go back not hundreds but thousands of years. That maybe they won't get a well and wise ancestor until they're in the Paleolithic or something.
Wow.
But that where families have come with a specific religious tradition, and actually especially if it's got a recent history of Catholicism, because of the Requiem and the saying of the Requiem and the tending of the dead as an ongoing thing.
Yeah.
So Requiems for the dead attended at least yearly, pretty much, without fail.
Yeah.
That the well and wise ancestors are accessible at a far more recent historical level.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Because the dead have been tended.
Yes.
They have been prayed for. Yes. They were grieved for properly.
Yes.
A priest person made sure they went to the place they're supposed to go, and they weren't encouraged to hang around on the mortal plane.
Yeah.
And that then they've been prayed for. They've been prayed for. They've been attended to. They've been, you know, their souls sent on that journey that turns us out of the troubled dead, out of the remembered dead even, and into the well and wise ancestors. And it's so interesting, and that is so important that we tend our dead.
It is.
And, you know, the indigenous societies of the world, insofar as they've made any comment, have made it, you know, let it be known that much of what is wrong with the West is that we have forgotten how to tend our dead.
Yeah.
And that our society and our kind of entire landscape really is firstly full of the troubled dead, because we forget to, firstly, we don't have permission to grieve them, because death and weeping are two of our taboos still, almost. And then that we don't remember to pray for them, we don't make sure they've gone to the right place, and then we don't do that thing of ancestralizing by continuing to pray for them. And so then also, because we pay them almost no attention, we don't do the healing that's necessary to undo the trauma that we've been handed through their lives.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we're, you know, fully messed up, stuffed.
Yeah. And that really explains why I am so absolutely repulsed by the adverts for pure cremation on the television. Which is basically you stick somebody in the box and put them in the cremator, no prayers, no nothing, anything like that. And people saying, oh, I can relax now. I'm not going to have any of that mumbo jumble. And I'm just thinking, whole generations are just not going to be honoured.
Yeah.
And my, what is it? It's 3 months since my mother died, I think now. And I know how important it is to honour her. And it was a little bit difficult to start with because of all the stuff that we've been going through our lives and the karma that we had together. But I'm finding now that I'm just whispering to her, thank you for this gift. Thank you for that gift. And I've realised how much more like you that I am than I thought I was. And I've already also realised that I have all the negative traits in me that I judged in you. And it's only since you died that some of them have come through for me. And, you know, maybe I'm handling them a little bit better than you, but actually growing up and learning from you has been part of the process that I can handle them better than you. You know, and absolutely, of course you couldn't handle them. You didn't have a Susie. You didn't have a Kathy. You didn't have a Kimmery. You didn't have a Deb. You didn't have a John. You didn't have all these people who picked you up in their cradle, tucked you into their arms when you were ill and said, let's unravel this. None of that. And so many of us now are, oh, it breaks my heart, all the women and some of the men too. I mean, it's mostly women, the fibromyalgia, the chronic pain issues, the mental health issues. Friend, acquaintance, comedian who had massive sex change surgery a year ago, she's still screwed up. She's no less screwed up now than she was when she had a penis. And it just keeps flooding out on Facebook, and people will comfort her and get her as clear as possible and help her. But it doesn't heal the problem because it's just putting band-aids on it. And I broke every rule on the planet and sent her a copy of Louise Hay's You Can Heal Your Life. Louise tells you not to.
Right. In the book, don't send this to all your friends. They've got to be ready for it.
But I was talking to her and I asked her and I sent her a copy, but she didn't read it. So it was a waste of time and money. But until she can know that she's worthy and loved and true and stop absolutely hating God. Because the thing is, the way you do something is the way you do everything. And she hates.
Absolutely.
She hates. She hates so many people. And you can see why from her childhood and her upbringing and everything that's gone on for her. But without some sort of surrender and the letting go of hate, I can't see a way forward. And it's, I was on the prayer line this morning again, and some woman was talking about her daughter was an alcoholic and a grandchild who was an alcoholic and drugs and the whole family. And you could actually see that she was carrying the root of that, not to blame her in any way, shape or form, but because of her life and her parents and probably a lack of honouring of the ancestors. She couldn't pass much on to her own children. Thank God she's ringing up for prayers for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Big time.
Yeah. You know, and I gave her huge praise for that and said, thank you for doing this. This is a blessing for your children. You know, honour yourself for doing it and take better care of you.
I think it's so important that we understand how a prayer is a word spell.
Yes.
So there are a lot of people who are quite resistant to the idea of praying, especially if you've got an uncomfortable relationship with religion. But understand that words are spells. And that the power of the word is absolutely extraordinary.
Yes.
And that you do not need to believe in an upstairs old dude in the sky as God to say a prayer.
No.
All you need to know is that the power of the word, of the spoken word, with almost like you don't even necessarily need to pay any attention at all to what am I praying?
Mm.
What you're doing is you yourself are using your power as part of the indivisibly interwoven web of life
mm.
to tend to reality.
Yes.
And so if you say out loud things like, you know,
bless you.
Bless you. I love you. Please forgive me. Thank you.
Yes.
Four of the hardest things we'll ever say, supposedly. Yes. The hope and over obo, or however you
say
it.
Hope and obo, obo. I like that.
Statement thing, which is a, yeah. if you don't know, it's a
I love
Hawaiian.
You, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you.
Yeah.
That's, I recite that when I walk on the moor, when I'm walking in the lanes, when I'm shopping, because I've got one of those weird Aspergery brains that will just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or something if it's not occupied.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a brain like that, put in an affirmation.
Mm.
So that my automatic default thing is I love you. That's my automatic default phrase now. If my brain has nothing else to do, it'll start going, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. And my life is so much the better for it.
Yeah.
And if somebody is mad in front of you in a queue or having a hissy fit in a swimming pool, I don't know why I remember that one, but or something like that, just observe them and just think, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, because we're all one.
Mm-hmm.
And just to have that calming influence next to them, they don't hear it, but they do.
Oh, yeah.
You can stop a baby crying in a supermarket by just loving that child and saying, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. Though actually you usually have to love the mother because the baby's crying because the mother's so fraught.
Mm.
And this idea of we don't get taught how to pray very well, but Unity, for whom I do the prayer line, is all affirmative prayer. So I'll say, I am holding you in the arms of love. I am holding you up to God. God is seeing you now. God's grace is now in you, dissolving this problem. Allow it, accept it, surrender. It is done. And it's so interesting how when you will speak with that authority, and that's all that priesthood is,
mm.
is the courage to say, you are blessed. You are worthy. That's all it is. It's just the courage. And so often people will just look at you with their eyes wide open going, really? Because nobody's told them that.
Yeah.
You know, when I pray for people, I will say, I see you well, I see you whole. And I will say, thank you that they're healed. Thank you, God, that this person is healed. Thank you that it's sorted. Thank you.
Yeah, beautiful. And yes, that we don't need to, actually, we don't need to have any belief in anything other than
connectedness,
our interconnectedness, our interwovenness. Yes. Absolutely. And
are you looking something up there?
I'm trying to find a poem that I want to read to you.
Okay, well, I will blather for a little bit longer then. On the there's a lovely group on Facebook, which is a healing prayer group. And I will always, if I engage with something, will say, I'm seeing him home from hospital, laughing, eating a good meal, relaxing, being with you all again and saying, whoa, that was a bit tough, but my goodness, I'm glad it's over and it's all well. And the relief it brings people, just to have somebody offering them the final solution. And what we tend to do, I think, with prayer, I'm going to contradict what we said earlier, you've got to take step by step by step towards the solution, but you've got to hold the end
mm.
in your heart, which is, I know this is sorted. It just hasn't manifested in the physical yet.
Yeah.
You know, I know this is all right. It doesn't feel it now, and your body is going to take a month or two to respond and to get things through. Oh, I might do it tomorrow, but we don't know. But it's done. Trust it. And we've not been taught to trust.
No, not at all.
And we haven't been led by trustworthy people. And we probably haven't had trustworthy parents who were doing the best they could with the knowledge they got. So how do we teach people to trust?
Well, you actually can't. All you can do is invite people to trust.
And be trustworthy.
Well, yeah, firstly, be trustworthy. But Trust is one of those things. So trust is one of those things that the spirits cannot show you that they are trustworthy unless you trust them.
Yes.
And so it's one of those circular things where you do not give them the opportunity to show themselves trustworthy without taking the risk to trust in the first place. And so you can't teach someone how to trust. All you can do is show by example to trust.
Yeah.
And that's it really. That's all you can do is if by living a life that is clearly full of trust is the only way.
And yet if you aren't if you aren't trusting of somebody, and I've done this myself and it's only in retrospect I've observed it, when you really don't trust anyone, you will actually push the other person's aura to betray you.
Okay, yeah, I would say that applies to literally everything.
Yeah.
That what you project onto people will become a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
Even if it's not really happening.
Yes.
Because your projection will view whatever it is they're up to through that lens.
Yes.
And neatly fulfil the prophecy for you. I cannot find this poem. It's extraordinarily annoying.
We're on 35 minutes, so why don't we find it for next time?
All right then. Good.
We'll do that. Thank you. We'll talk to you again next week.